It feels very silent in here. As I stopped talking a few minutes ago, I just landed in the silence myself. It felt quite still and quite silent. And just then in the pause between words, there's such a deep silence in here. Silence can be a real refuge for us. Several of you in the opening circle mentioned the kind of being glad to be here. No one used the word refuge, but you know, as a refuge from what's happening in the world, the kind of the relief to step away from the news, from the busyness of our usual lives and from the season, and also from the particular upheaval in our country at this time. And so coming to practice, coming on retreat at a time like this can serve as a real reminder of the value, the refuge of the Dharma, of our practice, of the importance of and the value of silence and stillness. Not only the relief we get just in stepping back, but also in what we can gather, like gather our strength in this time also. And the theme for our retreat this week, those of you who've sat retreat here before know we usually have a theme, a Dharma theme for our retreats. So the theme for our retreat this week is refuge. It did feel to me in thinking about this theme that many of us would be coming here as a refuge at this time, particularly at this time. I was at IMS teaching the long retreat, the 3-month course during the election and the follow-on from that. And so I was kind of in a refuge at that point. I was in a place of stillness and silence and a place where I could moderate my news and not have to speak or confront it unless I wanted to confront it. And I did. I did step out and look at that from time to time. And then on return, just this past week, and speaking to people, I've really felt the the challenge of what so many people are experiencing right now. One thing that I've heard a number of times in the past few days, I just got home a week ago, so in the past few days, as I've been talking to people who haven't been sitting for 2 months or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, as I've been talking to people who are hearing what's happening in our country and in our world right now, I'm hearing people say things like, I'm experiencing a level of feeling unsafe in my country that I've never felt before. I thought things were stable. I thought this country was stable, and it doesn't feel stable right now. And so to me, this brings up the question, in a way, some of what's being pointed to here is the truth that things are impermanent, unreliable, unstable, uncontrollable. And we resist that truth. It's not to say that we should simply roll over and let things happen around us. And yet, there's kind of a real opportunity here for us to recognize, have we been taking refuge in something that is unreliable? Have we been counting on something that is not reliable? We do this. We tend to place our refuge, our sense of security, our trust in relationships and family and home and money and job and in democracy, perhaps, in decency, in integrity, assuming norms of a culture of decency. And it's possible that this time is offering us an opportunity to look at some deeper levels of unreliability that some of us at least have not had to face in this country before. And so I think to some extent the current events of our country have revealed a tenuousness to many of the ways that we take security, safety for granted here. And often our usual sense of security is founded on not really acknowledging or being open to the impermanent, unreliable nature of the world. And so we find ourselves in need of perhaps a more reliable refuge. And what might be a more reliable refuge? It's interesting that we resist, we push away this truth of impermanent, unreliable. It's truth. It is true that the world, our experience, is impermanent, unreliable. It's not our fault that it's this way. It's not somebody else's fault that it's this way. This is very often where we go to, I think, when we meet this truth. Either we're to blame or somebody else is to blame for this problem. And so we rebel against this. We fight it, we deny it, we react, we get angry, frustrated, hostile, confused, depressed, lonely, feel betrayed. And a piece of that is struggling against the way things actually are, struggling against the truth. If we could find a way to align ourselves with truth, maybe we could come into a place of balance. I like this word, balance. A place where we're not tipped over by things. And from a place of balance, it doesn't mean that we simply... A place of balance to me means a place of a place of opening to just that this is the way it is, a truthful acknowledgement of this is the way it is. And from that place of balance, it's not simply that we sit there and say, oh, well, I guess that's the thing, way things are. But from that place of balance, there's a place from which we can act. With wisdom, with compassion, with kindness. And so this balance, as we open to the truth and don't fight the truth anymore, don't fight it, but really open to it, as we open to that truth, we also feel the deep suffering that results because of these truths. And our heart kind of breaks, wants to respond in a way. This is the movement of compassion, this wanting to act in the face of suffering. And so this place of balance, an ability to meet the truth, this we could call maybe something of a more reliable refuge. A mind that can respond rather than react. A heart that opens with compassionate action rather than constricts in anger and fear. And so this mind of that capacity, that possibility of meeting experience the way it is, meeting the world, responding rather than reacting. This is the possibility that the Buddha offers us the teachings the Dharma offer us, and our community of the Sangha supports us in. These three, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and they are the traditional refuges for a practitioner. I think of the Buddha, taking refuge in the Buddha. We might appreciate the fact that the Buddha actually set this teaching in motion 2,600 years ago. So we might have some connection to the actual person of the Buddha and have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for what he actually did for the world. That's one way to explore a refuge in the Buddha, the actual person who opened this door for us. And yet kind of more symbolically and maybe more in the felt sense in this moment, I think of the Buddha as a refuge in the Buddha as a kind of a reminder. The Buddha was a human being, you know. He wasn't a god or something, you know. He was a human being, and he found this path and he taught this path. He said, you know, if it were not possible, I wouldn't ask you to do this. So as human beings, it's possible. It's possible to wake up to this capacity to meet the truth, not constrict around it. And so for me, I sometimes reflect on taking refuge in the Buddha as being taking refuge in our capacity as human beings. We all have this capacity to be awake, to be aware with wisdom, wise mindfulness, the capacity for freedom is here in us. So to me, this is just a reminder, and there's a sense in which I can step back and take some kind of trust in that simple capacity as a human being. This is possible. And then the refuge in the Dharma also having different aspects to it, but the aspect of the teachings, the practices that the Buddha taught. Sometimes we can take refuge in simply doing the practice, following the schedule, sitting, walking, realizing that the actual waking up is kind of out of our hands, or it's out of our, you know, it's not our, we don't get to say when it happens. We don't get to say how it unfolds. But if we keep staying with this practice of the Dharma, we will learn more and more. The Dharma, onward leading, is sometimes said. We learn a little bit, we learn something, and it feeds back on itself. And then there's also a way that the refuge in the Dharma is a refuge actually in the truth. It is the awakening to the truth, the not resisting. This is the way things actually are. And then the Sangha. We can think of the Sangha both as the support that we've received from the community of practitioners who have practiced from the time of the Buddha. And that is how we come to sit here. There have been people practicing this path for 2,600 years. And so there's a lineage of beings who have shared this with each other. And that's the support. I sometimes think of the Sangha as being the support for us. It's how we have come to be here together. Whether you first met the Dharma through a friend or through a book, through a podcast, through somebody on the radio, through hearing a talk, somebody wrote those words, somebody said those words, somebody gave you the book, somebody published the book. There was a connection, a human connection. And here, too, we have this Sangha practicing together. It will be a support for us in community together. So I think of refuge in a way as a I feel like it's kind of got two sides to it. It's got the side to it where it is kind of like a seclusion. We are here in this retreat, retreating from the world. And it can be a great refuge, this retreating from the world, secluding ourselves from the world. And yet the true refuge of meeting the challenges of the world without reactivity, with responsiveness instead of reactivity. I feel that this refuge provides us with this secluded refuge provides us with some possibility of this refuge that just goes with us wherever we are. And that we, in a sense, in this bringing ourselves out of the world, are gathering resources and cultivating strengths that can be carried back into the world. This refuge of the Dharma is not about hiding. It's not about disconnecting or decoupling from the world. In fact, I feel it's exactly the opposite. That as we really land and connect with this refuge, we can be we can model a different way to be in this world.
For those of you who are new to all this. This opening evening, we usually do a little talk giving the theme of the retreat, and then we talk about refuge and talk about precepts. And since the theme of the retreat is refuge, the refuge talk just happened. And but the reason why we start retreats with these two topics is that the refuges and the precepts create a context for within which we're doing the practice. And they're considered to be very important context for it, because the refuges and the precepts can be the teachers for us, the guides for us, the mirrors for us, and can be the nourishment for us as we go along. And so it's my task to talk a little bit about the precepts. And the precepts have many functions, what I just mentioned, but one of them is that they're also a gift. And to live a life of an ethical life is a gift to others, to everyone. And one of the instructions the Buddha gave, one of the few instructions he gave about refuge directly, was he said, make yourself a refuge for all beings. So that's quite a little bit different feeling than, you know, go for a refuge, which is so profound thing to do. But make yourself a refuge for all beings. Make yourself safe for all beings. And living by the precepts is one of those ways. And here at the retreat, we're doing profound work. It's amazingly sensitive and vulnerable and important areas of people's lives that get touched on retreat. And it's particularly important here that we create an atmosphere of safety for each other and for ourselves. And I'm ready to vouch for all of you. And, your ethics is exemplary. And I don't think that if I left my wallet, dropped it, you know, down there in the community hall, and I'm pretty confident, I'm like 99.9999% confident that you all it would be safe down there. And you're not going to pocket my money and run off. And this is a safe community. However, we might know that on some level. But some of the deeper levels inside of us, deeper in our heart, some of the deepest places of conditioning or deeper places of kind of disarming ourselves, doesn't always know that consciously. Doesn't know, you know, the unconscious. And so it's a very important part of the retreat is to do a little ritual at the beginning where together we share and show each other that this is what we're orienting ourselves to for this week. We're orienting ourselves to not actively causing intentionally harm, not killing, not taking what is not given, not engaging in sexual misconduct, which on the retreat means to be celibate, and not to lie, and not to engage in recreational drugs in order to get intoxicated in any way with alcohol or other drugs. And there are people who struggle with these issues in our society, and some people, they come here, and this is supposed to be a place where they feel safe to struggle and find a way through those kinds of things which they're struggling with. Some people have been the victims of various challenges of like this, and so it's really important to come here and feel like here they could be safe and disarm themselves or lower their guard in some way to see what's underneath the guard, underneath the armor, see what's going on. So I feel it's a very important part of the retreat. It's the shared intention of. The refuges create the wider context of the purpose of what we're doing, and the precepts set the kind of behavioral context that this is what we expect and what we intend, the best of our abilities to live this way. So it can be as subtle as being careful not to kill a mosquito. Some people can react very instinctively to mosquito and slap it. it means being careful with each other here so that we don't take what is not given. And if it's not obviously offered some way, if you feel like you need to have it, maybe ask. Maybe it is offered, or maybe it can be offered if you have a need, but not to assume. To be celibate, to not keep your sexual energy to yourself. There are people who have tremendous challenges with sexual life, with what's happened to them in their lives. And so to be hold your sexual energy to yourself so it doesn't spill over into other people in any kind of way. And so we call it being celibate. And then, it's one of the things that inspires me a lot on retreat is the subtlety in which people are committed to not lying. And the way I see it is someone will say something in a meeting with a teacher and then come back the next time and say, I need to apologize. And they were not trying to lie, they're not intentionally trying to lie, but they didn't say it the way it was really, right. And they feel kind of ethically kind of challenged that they'll come out, they breach or they caused harm or something, and they'll come and apologize. And in ordinary, I wouldn't have think nothing was needed. It wasn't an issue, really. But I'm so touched by the sensitivity and the care in which it goes to come back and talk about it. And we really want to be able to meet ourselves, get to know ourselves, heal ourselves, without any substance getting in the way, without anything that pulls us away, without anything that distracts us, or we want to develop how to discover how to have a clear mind. So we don't want to do anything that takes that clarity away. So we do the refuges and the precepts, and as something we'll share here. And so the way we do it is a chant, call and response. The refuges we'll do in the ancient Pali language. It starts with a salutation to the Buddha, kind of respecting him. And then we do the precepts, the refuges. And each of these is done three times. And so you'll hear the salutation three times. And then the refuges are done three times, but after the second time we say in Pali for a second time, which that word is dutiyampi. And then for the third time we'll say the word tatiyampi. And the words in Pali for the refuges are buddham saranam gacchami. The saranam gacchami is used each time, and it means, gacchami is a common word for walking, and it means to go. And saranam is the word for refuge. I go for refuge in the Buddha. Dhammam saranam gacchami. I go for refuge in the Sangha. In the Dhamma. And then Sangha saranam gacchami. I go for refuge in the Sangha. So I'll lead. And I'll do one or two words at a time. And then you can repeat after me. And then we'll do the precepts as well. In English. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Mudam
saranam
gacchami dhammam saranam gacchami sangham saranam gacchami dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. And then the precepts will be done in English, and I'll do half the phrase, half the sentence at a time, and then you can repeat after me. For the sake of our training together, I commit myself to not causing harm. For the sake of our training together, I commit myself to not taking what is not given. For the sake of our training together, I commit myself to celibacy. For the sake of our training together, I commit myself to not lying. For the sake of our training together, I commit myself to not intoxicating mind or body. Thank you. I put tremendous value in this shared intention and what we're doing here. And I thank you very much for coming to this retreat. I don't take it as an accident or coincidence, the combination of people who've come and gathered together for this event. I think it is quite significant and precious. And I value being able to spend this week together practicing with you. And by design, we end the evening relatively early, so this first night people can go to bed as early as possible. The hall stays open. If you prefer to sit here and meditate into the evening, you're welcome to do so. It's good to get as much sleep as you can the first night. So I hope you all sleep well and contentedly and cozy in this new home. And if you can't sleep so well because it's the first night in a new bed, I hope that you just stay cozy. and then we'll meet in here at 6 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.